This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines personalized service, convenient packaging, and modern technology to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/TWiT to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescription. And by Automattic, the connected car company that improves your driving and integrates your car into your digital life. For more information, visit automatic.com/TWiT and enter the code TWiT to get 20% off your purchase. On today's show,
you'll know how to choose between a Chromebook or a Cloudbook.
It's the TWiT show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next 30 to 45 minutes, we're going to be showing you some of the tech that we've been geeking out with so you can take it home and geek out on your own. Brian, we're doing something a little different today. It's
yeah.
a little strange. Normally, a Thursday would be the build-heavy day.
Right.
And then Mondays are sort of our lighter know-how. It's things like this. You know, which notebook do you choose? How do you set up X, Y, or Z?
Right.
We're switching it today. So today we're getting sort of the lighter content, and that's for one reason. That's because on Monday, it's March 14th, and that's 3.14, and we had to do a Pi build day.
Yeah, that just works out
it
way
just,
too well.
It just
so
calls.
We
it
have
just,
to do yeah. Pi. And Sorry. I've been working on a pretty fun Pi project I want to share.
And, you know, now with the Raspberry 3, I've got one that I want to play with, so.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I saw the pictures. Mm-hmm. You haven't brought it in here, though. Yet,
no, I'm no way.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that.
but we've got a good episode for you today, folks. This has actually been one of the questions that has come into us over our Twitter feed and in our Google Plus group, and that mm-hmm. is choosing a low-priced notebook. There's been a lot of buzz over the Chromebook. It's a fantastic platform for what it is.
Right.
But there are also very low-cost Windows notebooks, Windows 10 notebooks.
Right.
And we want to see, could they give a Chromebook a run for its money?
Yeah, there's a few pros and cons to each, you know. Obviously, this is a little smaller.
Yes, yeah, that's
Chromebook.
Kind of smaller. Yeah, you know, let's do a just off the bat comparison.
Right.
The reason why we chose two from Acer was for one reason, and that is we wanted to get the same style. So these are similarly priced. Yours runs at what?
This is $329.
And this is $250. And that starts at $279, and this starts at under $200. So,
yeah.
You know, they are actually pretty much in the same price range or within spitting difference, spitting distance.
Yeah, definitely.
And there are a couple of other differences. Like, for example, yours has a touchscreen.
Yes, it has a touchscreen, and it does this nifty little thing
yeah.
where it flips all the way over, and you have just access to tablet.
It's kind of a hybrid
yeah,
notebook.
It's definitely a hybrid. I think the Lenovo Yoga was the first laptop I played with that was like that.
Mine doesn't have a touchscreen, but the screen can flip over once.
You're right, and then you can't use it ever again.
You can't use it ever again.
Oh, okay.
This is more of a traditional notebook, but again, it's a low-priced notebook.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured the best way for us to test this out would be for each of us to take one. And I gave you first dibs.
Right.
We had both of them in the studio, and we said, well, Brian, which one would you like to take home and run for
And I said
few
the
weeks?
Better one, so I took this one.
See, we're starting already. This is supposed to be information for them, not a fight between the two of us.
Well, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Yeah.
I mean, besides...
That's our style.
My choice is clearly
better. But, I mean, the biggest difference, I'd say, is that is an OS, has an OS that you can live with not
yes.
online. Chromebooks are specifically made to be used when you have a Wi-Fi connection. I mean, you could use it without a Wi-Fi connection, but really... It's not the best situation for that.
No.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and see what you were able to discover over the couple of weeks that you were using it. So, Alex, without further ado, why don't you go ahead and push that magic button.
So if you've ever found yourself in need for a light, portable, semi-rugged device with good battery life, chances are you've probably looked at getting a Chromebook. The one I'm looking at today is the Acer R11. The exact model is the C1LK, which comes in at $329.99. For that price, you get an Intel 1.6 gigahertz quad-core Celeron coupled with 4 gigabytes of RAM. Onboard is a 32 gigabyte SSD, but you will also get 100 gigabytes of Google Drive storage free for 2 years until you have to start paying $199 per month, and that's how they get you. But as far as ports on this laptop, you have an HDMI out, one USB 3.0, one USB 2.0, and a full-sized SD card for transferring files or memory expansion. Picking up the laptop, it comes in at 2.7 pounds, so it's pretty light. It's mostly plastic, but it does have a matte finish, so it's not a fingerprint magnet, and it has kind of a hatch pattern all over it, so it feels really grippy in the hand, which is super handy when walking around with it. And the top part is actually made out of aluminum, which you probably wouldn't notice, but it definitely makes the laptop feel more solid and rigid in the hand. And then towards the back of the laptop, you see the two metal hinges. That's because this laptop can fold all the way around on itself. It has a 360-degree hinge, which allows you to either put it in the traditional laptop position or a tent, or even flip it all around for as like a tablet mode, which is handy because it comes with an 11.6-inch touchscreen that is super responsive, has really good color, and it has a wide viewing angle. It is a 1366 by 768 resolution, so it's not 1080p, but I never found that to be much of a problem on a screen this tiny. Like, YouTube videos looked fine, watching Netflix was great, and speaking of streaming videos, I was able to watch Netflix, flip between web browsing and word processing and using Google Sheets and some of the other Google apps, and never had any sluggishness or anything like that. And while I was streaming all these videos and using the laptop, I would get on average around 9.5 to 10 hours, and that's because of the 3,490 milliamp battery. On the bottom of the laptop are a couple of speakers. On most of the Chromebooks, speakers are kind of an afterthought. These are budget devices, but I was pretty impressed at how loud they got, considering how tiny they are. But you'll definitely want to keep a pair of headphones with you if you're ever going to be doing any like video watching for long periods of time. The keyboard itself feels a little flimsy when you push down hard on it, and there's not a lot of travel to the keys, but that's to be expected from something made out of this material and this small, but it never really bothered me too much. As far as the key placement and everything, the layout's nice for the keyboard. You have all your hotkeys that you would need at the very top as far as like controlling sound and brightness and things like that. And here's a pro tip for some of you new to Chrome OS. If you hold Alt and the search button, where the caps lock normally would be, is how you toggle between caps lock and not having caps lock. Now, some of the highlights are of this laptop is the price at $329 for this kind of hardware is pretty decent. There is a cheaper model, the C32M, that comes in at $279.99. It comes with 2 gigabytes less of RAM, and that's about it. Another highlight of this laptop is the design. Being able to flip the screen completely around and using it like a tablet is super nice. And it makes me think that when netbooks were first invented, this is pretty much what they should have been to begin with. If you don't want to do a tablet with a silly keyboard attachment or something like that, this is a really good alternative, and the hinges feel really solid. The battery life is 10 hours, which is more than enough for me to go to work, go to school, do some word processing, and survive another day. So if you're the kind of person that's looking for a keyboard and a decent touchscreen and you want to be able to take it to school or work or something like that, definitely take a look at the R11. It's definitely my favorite Chromebook for the time being.
Okay, so that's actually kind of nice.
Yeah, no, it worked out really well for me. And, you know, this is actually the first Chromebook that I've got to have my hands on for more than like a few hours at a time. And I could definitely see myself being...
There's a
reason for it.
I will say this. I cheated because I actually had that Chromebook for a month before you took it.
You did not tell
me
that.
So I got to play with it a little bit. And then I reset it. So everything was back to the default.
I do like that option that's in the settings where it's like nuclear mode or something like that. Yeah.
Gone. Everything's gone. I will say the only Chromebook I had my hands on before this was the Pixel.
Right. And which, oh, God, that seems like such overkill hardware for what OS it's running.
It really is. But, I mean, the Pixel is elegant. It's svelte. It's got super high resolution. The hardware is high, top notch.
Who's going to pay that price
for exactly.
that?
Exactly. Yeah. This is actually a Chromebook that I think is more in tune with the Chromebook market. You're going to want a Chromebook as a second or a third device. You're going to want a Chromebook for someone who shouldn't normally have a high-powered computer.
And it doesn't feel cheap either. Like, it feels solid. This is what, when, you know, they're making Ultrabooks.
Right,
like,
right.
The little Atom processors, those first ones that came out, like the EEEPC. This is what those should have been.
They should have. Exactly.
We finally got to that
point. I still have one of those down in the no-hole, like the original netbook.
Yeah, netbooks.
And
yeah.
Actually, that was also an Acer. I remember I bought that for like $175.
I did too.
And they are ridiculously underpowered.
I know. I was so excited about it too when I first got it. I was like, oh, I'll put Linux on it. It'll be great.
No.
It was like the first Raspberry Pi that I played with, and I tried to, you know, have an OS on that. It's like once you get over the novelty of it being a tiny little computer, you realize it's a tiny little computer, and it doesn't really work that well. But finally, like with this Chromebook and some of the other ones, I think, you know, these are the tiny little laptops that we were waiting for.
Well, we are going to do a comparison between your experience with the Chromebook and my experience with the Cloudbook. Of course, first we're going to have to do the review because I spent some time with my device. And I
didn't spend any time with your device.
I know.
I feel like I should have it for a month now.
No. You're not. Well, I mean, you'll see it in the review.
Okay.
But before we do that, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How. Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
You have to take pills.
I should. I should probably more than I do.
You know,
especially
what I love?
Vitamins.
You know what I love more than anything else?
Are you going to say pills?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I was going to say remembering which pills I'm supposed to take.
Yes, the hard part of taking pills.
That's always fun, right?
Yeah.
You got that little pill minder box, or maybe you have got a note. You have to take two of these and three of these. Again, I have a massive vitamin B deficiency. In fact, I'm like a vitamin B black hole. I'm probably sucking vitamin B out of your system right now.
That's I remember. They wanted to perform experiments on you because they didn't believe that someone could survive this
long.
For that.
Well, folks, you could do it the old way. You could get a pill minder. You could set a little alarm on your watch or on your phone to tell you that this is the time for you to take X medication, X vitamin, X whatever it may be. Yeah, you could do it that way. Or you could come into the digital century and work with PillPack. Now, this is what a PillPack looks like. It is your pharmacy self-contained. Now, each of these pills are like this. It's just a little piece that you can tear off, and inside is exactly what you're supposed to take on the exact day and the exact time that you're supposed to take it. It is a far more accurate way for you to measure out your dosage. We discovered PillPack as a full-service pharmacy because we wanted something online. We wanted something that was a bit more accurate than me counting out pills into a plastic box. They will pre-sort and deliver my medications and vitamins in those easy-to-tear packets. And again, it makes it so easy for me to remember, have I taken my pills? Have I not taken my pills? What do I need to take next? They do this by using robots and digital imaging technology, along with a pharmacist who has oversight, to ensure the accuracy of every pill pack. They know what every pill looks like. They know how much it weighs. And so you always get the right medication in every pack. Their pharmacists are available 24/7 from the privacy of your own home. So you don't any longer need to go to the pharmacy and have those awkward pharmacy encounters. They will proactively call your doctor for you to manage all your refills so that you'll never run out. There are no extra costs beyond your standard copay. Shipping is always free, and it's compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. When you sign up for PillPack, they make sure that your insurance is compatible before they transfer over any of your medications. This is important because if you've ever gotten stuck with a bill because your insurance wasn't compatible, well, you want to avoid that. Switching is easy. You can sign up on their secure site and they'll take care of everything from you, from your OTCs to your prescriptions. It was recognized by Time Magazine as a top 25 invention. Jill Duffy gave it a great review in PC Magazine. And there's also a PillPack medication reminder app for the iPhone and the Apple Watch. PillPack is medication simplified. You won't believe how much easier and more convenient it is until you've tried it. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to visit pillpack.com/twit. That's pillpack.com/twit to sign up now. Their site is beautiful, and it only takes 5 minutes for you to sign up. When you use our link and transfer your prescription to PillPack, you'll also get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. That's pillpack.com/twit. pillpack.com/twit. And we thank PillPack for its support of Know How. more pills, more packs.
You know what's kind of crazy is my grandfather was a pharmacist, and he worked in this building. This used to be a pharmacy.
This is like Pillception now.
Pillception. I think he would have found that pretty cool, though.
He would have. And actually, he probably would have been one of the pill pack pharmacists.
Oh.
With the digital camera. Because we know, you know, your techno hippo.
My techno hippo. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, folks, we gave you a view of the Chromebook, but we've got to give you a view of the Cloudbook. If you want to see what the Microsoft version of a Cloudbook is, well, we just need to wait for Alex to push the magic button.
Can you build a budget Windows notebook without making it feel cheap? Starting at under $200 and featuring enough hardware to run Windows 10 while living in the cloud, the Acer Aspire 1 Cloudbook line is Acer's attempt to do just that. Our review unit was a top-of-the-line $250 Acer Aspire 1 Cloudbook 14, featuring Windows 10 on top of a dual-core Intel Celeron N3050 1.6 GHz CPU and 2 GB of shared DDR3 memory. A 14-inch comfy view 1366 by 768 16x9 matte finish screen adorns the top of the 13.4-inch by 9.2-inch by 0.3 to 0.7-inch clamshell chassis that weighs just 3.53 pounds. Storage is provided by a 64GB Hynix eMMC, and network connectivity comes from an 802.11 AC Wi-Fi adapter. With those specs, we wouldn't expect to see much performance, and not much is what we got. The Cloudbook 14 scored 1219 in PC Mark 8, and we didn't even bother to try running 3D Mark. Still, while the Cloudbook won't be breaking any benchmarks or pounding out frames for the latest first-person shooter, the performance it does have is used well. Applications that don't require a GPU run smoothly, and typical web and office functionality is well within its performance envelope. Speaking of Office, the Cloudbook line comes with a one-year subscription to Office 365 Personal, giving you access to the basic Office suite including Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, Notes, Publisher, and Access, as well as 60 Skype minutes a month and 1 TB of Microsoft's OneDrive cloud storage. Figuring that a one-year subscription runs $70 a year, that lowers the true cost to damn good. Additionally, the rest of the notebook is well-appointed for a budget device. There are 2 USB ports, 2.0 on the right and 3.0 on the left, while the left side also houses a full-size HDMI port, combo audio port, and the SD card reader. The case is plastic, but it doesn't feel weak or cheap, with a matte finish and a nubbled surface to bring it just above the level of simple gray box. The keyboard and trackpad are really good for a $200 device. With 1.5 mm of travel, the keys on the full-size layout are firm, well-spaced, and responsive. This did actually shock me. Usually a good trackpad and keyboard are among the first victims when manufacturers try to reduce costs. Not so with the Cloudbook 14. One place that Acer did skimp is the audio. The two tiny speakers are pretty much useless for anything but cursory listening. If you plan to watch movies and videos or listen to music, get yourself a nice set of headphones. The standout feature of the Cloudbook 14 has to be battery life. With the power-sipping CPU and screen, the Cloudbook 14 eked out just over 14 hours in our rundown test, with a low mark of 10 hours with heavy graphics usage. That beats not only all Windows laptops in this price range, but even has a few hours of power on higher-end Chromebooks. In all, the Acer Aspire Cloudbook 14 is a surprisingly good option for those who want a budget device, but still want the Windows experience. With good enough specs for most tasks, Microsoft Office for free, and a killer battery life, it might be just the thing for your second or third device.
Let me start by saying that if this had been the netbook, the netbook would have survived back then.
Back then, yeah.
But it is still a low-powered Windows PC.
Right. Battery life, though.
Battery life is fantastic. Pro. I mean, seriously, you can stretch this to 15 hours easy. If all you were doing was surfing the web, and if you allowed the screen to go to half brightness, and if you were connected via Wi-Fi, you would get 15 hours out of this.
Not
so
bad.
In that sense, it is a good second or third computer. But the question becomes, is it worth the $200, $250? And that all depends on one thing, if you're going to use Office. Because if you are going to use Office, that subscription is going to run you between $79 and $100.
Mm-hmm.
So that's half the price of a notebook. So basically, if you were going to buy Office anyways, you get a notebook for $100.
Which I think you just spelled out the biggest difference between these two machines is if you are in the Google ecosystem,
right,
it makes sense to go with the Chromebook. If you are someone who uses Office all the time, $250 for a laptop that you would have almost 15 hours of battery life for, that makes sense.
It does make sense. And you know, looking at the two devices, you can see that this, obviously, this is actually a pretty good value machine. That's one of the things I liked about this Chromebook. You do notice that they skimped on a few things. The material of the construction's not quite as good as you would get in a higher end. The screen doesn't have great viewing angles.
No.
But, you know, it does work. It does work as a tablet. It does work as a notebook. It does work as a cloudbook. For that much money, it's actually very, very attractive.
Right.
For this, there are a few things that they did absolutely right. I am convinced that they got the keyboard and the mouse for this Cloudbook off of, like, the Acer S7, one of their higher-end models.
Which makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference. I am so accustomed to cheap notebooks just having that cheap keyboard feel. This keyboard actually feels really nice. And this trackpad is responsive. It's not that like, it feels like it's on a spring and it's very inaccurate.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, there's the audio. They should have just ignored the speakers altogether. Just take the speakers out.
Well, that's kind of the same thing with the PC monitors. They put speakers and monitors just because.
Don't do it. Yeah. Stop. You know, in fact, they could probably save 99 cents taking each speaker out, put a $2 set of headphones inside the box, and it would sound so much better than this.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing about this is, you know, it actually is pretty light. This is a 3.5-pound notebook. If I had someone who I knew was either going to destroy their notebooks with regularity, or if I knew that all they really did was check email and write,
or they had to write papers, that's why I feel like these are
pretty good.
Perfect kind of college. Like, I wish I had this when I was going to school, kind of thing.
Yeah.
My biggest disappointment, I mean, I haven't played with this that much, is that no touch screen, which I would really like to see with a Windows 10 machine.
A touch screen on this would add something like $50 to the price. So instead of a $250 device, this is now a $300 device. And something else. Once you add a touch screen, people start expecting a bit more performance from it.
Well, you'll have to bump up the performance. You might even need a better integrated graphics. Yeah. But then you wouldn't be seeing the 14 hours of battery life
and
either.
And then you wouldn't be seeing this price point. Because if you upgrade the touchscreen, then you should probably upgrade the screen itself to a better screen, like an IPS screen. If you're going to upgrade that, then you probably need to bump it up to 4 gigabytes of memory. You should probably use a discrete graphics card.
Yep.
And you're probably also going to want a bigger SSD than 64 gigabytes.
And you're not going to get that for under $300.
No, now we're at $500.
That's why I like we're doing this comparison, because both these machines are basically distilled versions of, like, compromise.
Yes, you know? But I will say this. I will say that this Windows 10 box compromises more than the Chromebook.
I would agree.
Using a Pixel and using this, it feels the same.
Right.
Maybe the screen's not as sharp. Maybe it's not as snappy, but it's pretty dang close. Using the Cloudbook and using my Acer S7, you obviously feel that, oh, there's a huge difference in quality between the two.
That's true.
Yeah. So what takeaways can we give to the audience? So if they're considering a Cloudbook or a Chromebook, if they're looking at the Windows ecosystem or the Google ecosystem, what would your advice be?
All right. If you're like me and you're pretty much into the Google ecosystem because of work, I mean, that's what we use here, so I'm very integrated in that, I'd say definitely get a Chromebook. If you are someone who doesn't have Wi-Fi where you go when you would be using these, probably not your best bet. But if you're someone who is going to be going to school, be going to coffee shops, be going to work, and you want something that's durable, something you're going to throw in your backpack, and you also want a touchscreen, and you know, like, it works really well. The touchscreen works well. The disappointment I have with Google Chrome as, like, the OS is Chrome isn't really optimized for touch.
That's right.
So, like, when you're trying to thumb through browsers and stuff like browser tabs and things like that.
Chrome is horrible with touch.
Which is, like, I wanted to see the Edge browser on here, you know, Windows 10 style. But, you know, if you're someone who's going to school, you want to throw this in your backpack, and you don't need a lot of storage space because you're not going to be putting photos on this. You're not going to be, you know, editing video on this. You just want something to type up your papers and, you know, watch YouTube on it. This is the one to get.
I would totally go with that. I think you hit all the right points. You know, do you have Wi-Fi connectivity? Are you going to be doing a lot of things that involve the cloud and not being on device? And I think I can follow those same guidelines when I talk about the Cloudbook. So the nice thing about this Cloudbook is it is low cost, but it is a Windows 10 experience. So if you use this and then you move to a Windows 10 desktop, it will feel the same.
Right.
The other nice thing is it is Windows 10. So if you've got software that you want to run in Windows, it will work on this. It will not work on the Chromebook. So, for example, I installed Visual Studio on this, and I use this as a coding machine.
Nice.
It was fine for that.
Yeah,
I use this to program my Raspberry Pis. It was fine for that. So that part is, I like that. But not everyone wants that or needs that.
Yeah.
The other thing to remember about this is, yes, you do get the 1 terabyte of online storage with OneDrive. And yes, you do get Microsoft Office. But this is a capable notebook even if you're completely disconnected from the internet. It's not as if you lose functionality when you don't have connectivity. It just means you don't have access to all your online storage.
It's true. But I'd say for myself, there's very few occasions where I am without a Wi-Fi hotspot.
That's true.
That's my life right now.
That's true. And I will also note that this actually is cheaper than that. Not by much, but a tiny bit. So I think it's clear. If you are looking for a computer for non-computer people who just want to be able to do their things on the internet, the Chromebook is actually spectacular for that.
True.
If you've got a computer for someone who is a little bit computer savvy, I actually think the Cloudbook would work a little bit better.
I agree with that.
Okay.
As much as I'd hate to say it, but yes, you're right.
And I think it's also very clear that I chose the right one.
Maybe for you.
Maybe for me.
I'll hang on to this for a little while longer.
Oh, folks, when we come back, we've got your questions, our answers. But before we do that, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How. Hey, Brian, what do you got in your hands there?
Oh, just a little dongle for your car.
Oh, how about that? You know what? That reminds me of those things that I plug into the onboard data connector.
Oh, yeah. It's like that, but a lot better.
A lot better. Folks, if you've seen the latest and the greatest in automobiles, you've probably seen those smart screens, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the Tesla, the Prius, whatever it might be. It tells you how you're driving. It tells you what the health of the car is.
Right.
And that's cool. I like it.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
I think we've pointed out before that it makes a big difference when you see that little green leaf and you think that you're, you know that once you stomp on the accelerator, that's going to go
away. Positive feedback.
Positive
it tells
feedback.
You want to drive better. And normally, if you wanted to get those features, you'd have to buy a new car. Or you could just get an automatic. Now, the automatic, as we mentioned, is a dongle that plugs into the onboard data connector, and it gives you all that smart car functionality. It connects to your controller area network and will give your phone, your iOS or your Android device, vital information about how the engine is working. Are there any warnings? It will tell you what the codes are. It will decode them for you. But my personal favorite, and Alex, I think you've got a video for this, is what happens once it starts gathering all that data. It will let you know, how are you driving? How much fuel have you expended? Are you driving well? Are you driving poorly? Are you driving efficiently? Should you change the way that you're driving? Automatic isn't just a way for you to find out how you've done over the last week. It's also a way for you to find out how you can improve your driving habits. Like, for example, I had this habit whenever I drove between here and Las Vegas of going 90 miles an hour. Automatic was saying, you know how much fuel you're wasting? And it gave me a horrible grade. The next time I did it, I drove at 70 the entire way, and my fuel economy actually improved by about 60%. See, this is the bad day. This is the 49. You can see the days where I drove to Vegas there. Oh, it's not just fuel efficiency. You can do things like mile logging. If you're ever worried about whether or not you're going to get reimbursed for all of your travel, Automatic can actually work with several different applications to automatically input that information for you. I mean, think about that. So your car will fill out your reimbursement requests. How cool is that? Automatic works on your Bluetooth-enabled device, and it will automatically connect when you get into your phone and start the engine. I also like the fact that it will warn me if I have engine codes that need to be checked out. And I can set parameters like warn me when I'm braking too hard, or warn me when I'm accelerating too quickly, or warn me when I've crashed. And if you enable it, it can actually even call emergency services. So it's like so many different things that we've come to expect from expensive cars, but in one inexpensive dongle. Folks, I love my Automatic. I know you will too. Here's what we want you to do. We want you to try the Automatic. If you have a car made after 1996, it will work just fine. If you've got an iPhone or an Android, it will work just fine. If you want it to gather real-time performance data and intelligence, the Automatic is for you. Normally, it's $99.95, but when you use our special offer code TWIT, you'll save 20%. Just go to automatic.com/twit. That's automatic.com/twit for more information and to purchase, and use offer code TWIT to save 20% off the regular purchase price. Again, that's automatic.com/twit. And we thank Automatic for their support of know-how. I really, at first, I wanted to pull it out because I'm like, I'm getting such a low score. I don't want a low score.
You're disappointed in yourself.
That has changed the way I drive.
No, I like how you can get pretty geeky with it, but now I just want one for my motorcycle.
Do you have an ODB2 connector on your motorcycle?
I don't think so.
We could invent one, Brian.
I would totally be up for that. I mean, the gas savings on a motorcycle, I don't think, wouldn't be my highest priority, but I would love to see, like, distance, speed, and...
acceleration.
Acceleration, lean angle, things like that.
I will say, in a moment of geeky weakness when I was in Las Vegas, I was tired of low scores, so I figured out how to use an Arduino to create a fake CAN bus.
Simulate.
And I was like... I was going to feed data to them. And I'm like, what am I doing?
Who are you really cheating?
Cheating myself. That's ridiculous.
I thought you were going to say that you didn't have anywhere to go, but you drove around really slowly in the neighborhood.
You laugh. I've done that in my father's Prius before.
Just so that you can bump
just
up
to tick him off. So he wakes up and suddenly the fuel economy is 10 miles per gallon better. And he's like, how did you do that? I'm like, I don't know.
See, Dad?
All right. Brian, we do have some feedback from the folks. And, you know, it's been a while since we've answered some questions. So what do we got?
All right. So this one comes from our Google Plus page.
Hey,
and this is Jonathan Schrober. He says, I just discovered buying Maker parts from eBay. Is it really as good as it seems? A WS2811B strips are super cheap. Anything I should know?
Okay. This is actually a very good question. Thank you, Jonathan, for asking, because... we get this a lot.
Yeah.
eBay is a great place to get Maker parts because you can get them incredibly inexpensively. Like, for example, we've talked about this before.
Right.
If you buy an authentic Arduino Uno.
Or the Anduino that we
Anduino,
got. Yeah.
I mean, you will pay $10, $15, $20 for it. Whereas if you buy it overseas from a clone shop, you can get it for $2 to $4.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. I like to support the vendors that make the gear that I use. So I will always try to do that. But yes, I understand the allure and the cost savings are too much. But know that there's very little that you can do to get your money back from a bad sale. If you're, especially if you're buying from a Chinese company on eBay, which you are. Yeah, you can down rep them. I have not had any really bad experiences. Because what I'll typically do is I will find a vendor who works really well. I look for the scores. I look for a big one, a vendor who offers a lot of parts.
Right.
And that becomes the vendor I order from, even if the price is a tiny bit higher than someplace else that I've never ordered from before.
That's a very good rule of thumb for eBay, though. Definitely check the seller reviews.
And trust, right.
And trust,
And trust. Trust the ones who you've used before. Mm-hmm. Because I have received some strips that just weren't up to par. Like the voltage was off, or they were producing too much heat, or the colors were not quite right. And, you know, it seems a whole lot cheaper until you get one bad strip, and suddenly the price averages out to be more expensive.
Yeah, you know what? It probably over time it does average out. But for me, I think it would be, if I'm doing a project where I don't want it to fail. This is something that I'm working on that I can't think of an example, but it's like I don't want it to break.
Yep.
I'm going to put it somewhere and I'm going to have to rely on it for something. I would probably spend the extra bit of money for a real vendor or whatever, or at least somewhere where I could send it back if something did go wrong. But if I just want to tinker around, or I'm just starting to get in Arduinos and I'm not even sure if I want to play with them that bad, then I might just take a chance on a cheap eBay one, and just so I can play with it, get the parts, and if it happens to break, I won't be devastated because I was relying on this for a project that I was doing for the show. You know,
that's exactly right, Brian. I say that's the best advice that we can give. If you're prototyping, and we do that here all the time, and you're just messing around, we go through a lot of gear. We break a lot of stuff, or we just
sometimes by accident, sometimes on purpose.
We want to see it burn because it's
fun.
Yeah, but for example, I've been working with Brian Chi, and we've been making devices that will do power monitoring that are going to be in inaccessible regions.
Right.
So you want to...
So you're buying the eBay ones, then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because what you want is you want to save $12 so that you have to take the $600 trip to replace the sensor after it breaks.
Yeah.
And you know, you can actually see the difference. If you look at an authentic device and a clone device, a lot of times they'll use a cheaper solder.
Or PCB. Yeah.
Or PCB, or the capacitors won't be nearly as good. And it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. But again, yeah, if you're prototyping, I'd say buy to your heart's content on eBay.
Cool. Right? Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah.
So we got another question to take a look at here. This one comes from Andy Ridding, and he says, I'm looking for a car Wi-Fi device for kids to play Minecraft Pocket Edition. Internet access not needed. Any suggestions?
Yes, Andy. Actually, there are a lot of suggestions. There were quite a few suggestions inside the group comment itself. There are plenty of travel routers, Netgear, D-Link, TP-Link. They all have devices that will run off of 12 volts.
Mm-hmm.
Might I suggest something a little different, though?
Oh, do tell.
You hold on to that.
All right. We got a little, looks like a little Kingston
thing.
I'm
going to hold on to this.
What's that?
Well, this is a little device that allows you to create a local network that will share media.
Oh.
So think of it as a hotspot, but it's not designed to connect you to the internet. It's designed to connect you to like a flash drive or an SD card.
Yeah, it's like a LAN hotspot.
Okay. And this is exactly what he's trying to do. He's got his kids in a car. They're on tablets or whatever device that have Wi-Fi.
Right.
And if they can link together, they can play Minecraft against each other.
That's cool.
That's what this would do. And that's what that actually, that's like the very first version.
This was
a prototype version of their new 5-in-1. In fact, Alex, I think you've got a link to the 5-in-1, the Kingston 5-in-1 mobile companion. That's the brand new version. So this was the beta version of that. It's about $35 plus free shipping. And what it will give you is it will give you a hotspot, which you could equip for internet access. You could turn it into a hotspot if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you could have a USB card, a USB drive, or an SD card, and the people who are connected to the network will be able to access it. And it's a great way for you to, like, load up all your kids' movies and put it in there, and now everyone in the car has access to them.
Oh, man, I would have killed for this when I was taking those nine-hour drives to go visit my grandparents with my two other brothers.
Precisely. But the other cool thing about this is, unlike a hotspot that may go up and down because it's losing its LTE or 3G connection.
Or eating your data.
Oh, yeah, eating the data. This will stay up the entire time. This can also be a power bank. So if you need to charge a device, there's a battery in here that you can use to charge the device while you're providing data. And
yeah, that's pretty smart.
It's smart, and I like the concept because it allows you to really quickly create for non-techie people a wireless network.
Well, yeah, and actually, when you're not using this in the car, so I was just telling about going to my grandparents, I'd love to take this out of the car, plug it in somewhere in the house, and then have, because my grandparents didn't have internet,
right?
Then I could watch videos from this without having to go on the internet. I like that idea. So don't just use it in the car.
Of course, if I my grandparents were still around, Brian, I probably would just spend time with them.
Now you make me feel bad. But you know what? Thinking back to this was like 15 years ago. Dial-up was a cool thing back then. Yeah.
Well, folks, we know that this is a lot of information, and so we're going to make sure that you get all the information in our show notes. You want links to the Chromebook and the Cloudbook that we reviewed? It's going to be in there. Do you want to find out where you could pick up one of these Kingston devices? It's going to be in there. And, Brian, where is there?
I believe I just got a call. Hold on a second.
No, that's not what that's for.
Oh.
No.
There's no screen. You can go to twit.tv/KH, and not only will you find our show notes, but you'll find past episodes and ways to subscribe. Make sure to download the audio version. No, not the audio version. No, you'll want to watch the video version, but you can find all the links to the things we talked about today.
Folks, also don't forget that we have a YouTube page, youtube.com/knowhow, KNOWHOW. The reason why you want to subscribe is because we are actually uploading videos to that channel that don't make it into the show.
They're not up to snuff. No, that's not quite right.
And
they're just kind of like behind the scenes.
If you were subscribed, you would have seen that we actually released a Raspi 3 first look the moment that the NDA ran out. We were sitting on it for a while.
I missed that. I didn't even see it.
See?
I really should subscribe to our
YouTube.
Maybe
you should subscribe to our YouTube group,
Brian. Hold on, I'm going right back on there.
Also, don't forget that you can join our Twitter? No, Google Plus group. That's right.
Oh, yeah,
Google Plus group. Go to Google Plus.
Where would we have gotten these questions if it were not for Google Plus?
Exactly. If you want to end up on the show, if you've got a project that you want us to show off, if you've got a question that you want us to answer, go to Google Plus and look for Know How. Join. We've got almost 10,000 know-it-alls, and they're very helpful people. I love the fact that they try to help one another.
the place to go to post your project. If you do happen to buy some of those Arduinos and you do run into a problem with one on the eBay, let us know, and then we'll find out and let other people know, too. Yeah.
That's not the only place to find us on the socials. You can find us on Twitter. You'll find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's PadreSJ.
Mm-hmm. And I am at @Cranky_Hippo.
And don't forget that you can find our director, the man who pushes the buttons and keeps us on time. That's right, his Jim Gumble.
Jimble.
Jimble.
Yeah,
Jimble. You'll find him at ANELF3.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Padre. That's Alex Gumble.
I've never actually seen his face.
You know, he keeps giving us these names.
He's in the dark.
I think I would have known that.
I have people to know that.
Whatever. I don't know. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballister.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go do it. It's hard to get the fist bump peripheral.
Whoa!